The Big Sip.
All right, y'all. So excited. We are back. Another episode of The Big Sip, where we are spilling some knowledge on some sip that matters. The people, the pioneers, the risk takers, the leaders behind all of this incredible space, from the food industry, culinary, wine, beverage, art industry. I'm your host, Gabriela Fernandez. Today, I'm so excited because in the hot seat today, spilling the knowledge, is an incredible human. I know him as Trey. Everyone else, y'all. Yes. Y'all might know him as George Washington Carver Walker III.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
A mouthful.
It's a mouthful for sure.
A mouthful for sure, but also speaks to the complex and incredible individual that you are.
Wow. Welcome. Thank you so much.
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Seriously.
No, I'm so excited you're here. This is literally so cool.
This is so dope.
I've been eager to get you into the studio so I can have this conversation, and more than anything, so that everyone else out there can really get to know who you are, the phenomenal things that you're doing, that you have done. I mean, you've got quite the resume behind you on the projects that you've started,
wow,
experiences you've been a part of, things that you're building for yourself, what you're still doing now.
Wow.
And this is such a great moment for everyone else to really dive deep and take a sip from your cup, learn a little bit about you.
Wow.
So cheers to
yeah,
you, homie.
Cheers.
Everything you've got going on. And
that was absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for that. You are like the perfect hype person. I am so here for this.
I'm here for it. I'm here for you all the time, however you need it. So you just recently moved here from Michigan.
Yeah, like literally 2 months ago. I've been in Napa for 2 months now. It's crazy. I love it. It's absolutely beautiful.
It's kind of hard not to love it,
right,
though, right?
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, it's gorgeous. It's apparently winter here, and it's like 67 degrees outside. It's almost 70 degrees. Clear blue skies.
Is that weird for you?
It's so weird.
Oh my God. It's so funny that you say that, because this weather to me, you saw me the other day. I'll be wearing like that huge green parka jacket where you're like, excuse me, girl, are you from Michigan? Because no one's dressing like that here.
Right.
But hey, it's Californians. We experience weather on a whole other level.
Oh my gosh. It's crazy. I'm never leaving California. I'm never leaving Napa. This
is good.
Great.
I'm glad. It means you like it here. It means you're finding a home, and you are. You have made your home here.
Seriously.
Actually working for Wade Cellars.
Right. Yeah. So I am the first official employee of Wade Cellars, and it's crazy how it all happened. And I am so thankful for that. It's crazy, you know.
So what do you do for Wade Cellars then? You're the
So I am assistant director of operations.
Badass.
It's wild. So I do literally all things. Like, I am the president's right hand man, and literally from developing our tasting program to depletion reports, to designing hats, to running our social media, to tastings, to we just kind of put together our blend for this upcoming release that we're gonna have next year. I got to sit in on that and taste through a bunch of stuff. Everything. All
that is so cool. You are literally involved in every single aspect.
It's pretty great.
And you're getting to build it from the ground up. What is that like? How cool is that?
It's so dope. It's so dope because, I mean, one, it's like, it's Wade Cellars, and
it's Dwayne Wade. Exactly.
Yeah, right. It's like, that's dope in and of itself. But really what is the trueness of Wade Cellars are the people a part of the organization. People like Matt Nauman, who's the president, who is one of the dopest humans that I have ever met. The reason why I love him so much is because of his passion, and even his own like project outside of Wade Cellars, Newfound Wines. He's doing completely all natural wines out of the Sierra foothills. Mm-hmm. He has like a natural Semillon. Like, who's doing that? Ooh. Like, it's so good.
It's usually used as a blend.
Right, exactly. It's usually used as a blend, but he's using it as a single varietal and doing it in a weird and funky, cool way, which he brings to Wade Cellars. Not only Matt Nauman, but also Jamie Watson, who is Dwayne's partner in Wade Cellars. He's a lawyer by day, mm-hmm, but can talk anyone around Burgundy, like easily. Like he can like talk circles around Burgundy to me. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. And he's like in it, like he's passionate about it, you know? And that's what makes, I think Wade Teller is so true. Are other people who are part of the organization, people like John Keys, who's our winemaker, who has a number of slew of other projects, but mm-hmm. Is putting his all into making some really dope juice for Wade Teller's.
I love that as you just talked about that, never in there did you mention yourself. And I'm just like, this is what the kind of individual we're talking with here. Someone who's so selfless, who looks at the things that he's building, but recognizes that it's a powerful team effort with everyone else who's around that. And that is so true in the moments that I've been grateful and blessed enough to spend some time with you outside of all of this work and just getting to know you. You're just so, so humble in that sense, but you have really done so many phenomenal things that have led you really to this moment from back when you were in Michigan. So walk me through sort of what that initially looked like for you, know, what that first sort of moment and spark looked like when you started kind of diving into this industry that led you now to where you are doing some badass work for Wade Teller.
Blessings. Thank you again. Wow. It actually started even before Michigan. Now that I think about it, it was when I was, it was when I was in high school, actually. I was trash at school, and trash in the sense of where the traditional education system failed me in the sense of where, I was a student that didn't necessarily learn the ways that they were teaching. So they thought I was, a quote unquote problem child. Mm. But my parents saw this and they saw something in me. And I remember like very vividly when my parents called me into their room and they ended up handing me this pamphlet. And I started looking through the pamphlet and, I'm looking at like cosmetology and carpentry and all these different programs. And they're just like, so since you're so trash at school, we're going to send you to a tech center so that you can focus more so on the vocational aspect of learning rather than the liberal arts aspect. Mm-hmm. Me being 16 years old and just hearing that I can like leave school for half the day and like go to a tech center, another school and like do whatever. I was like, yo, I'm going to do culinary, like period, because I can smash the entire time, eat all the food that I want to. And then, just go to school and just like, it'd be like home ec, but for half the day.
Exactly. So who doesn't like to eat some good food?
Right. Exactly. Period. So I ended up, choosing culinary, but I ended up like finding a passion and like falling in love with it so much so that I ended up getting a job on working on the grill line at this restaurant called Giovanni's Fine Italian Dining, flipping steaks and swordfish at like 16, 17. Yeah. And I just fell in love with it. And it came time like during my senior year to decide, what kind of school I was going to go to for undergrad. So I knew that I wanted to be a part of the industry, but I didn't necessarily want to be a chef because, really long hours, like more power to all the chefs out there and who are grinding.
Right.
And because that lifestyle is rough.
It's rough. There's some long hours
really,
that go into
like,
that.
Straight up. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just hard. So I decided I wanted to go to culinary school, ended up majoring in food and beverage management. And it was while I was majoring in food and beverage management that I ended up volunteering at this wine tasting event where I poured this called a Chateauneuf du Pape. And at the time I was like, a Chateauneuf du what, bro? Like,
can you say that name one
right,
more time?
Right. Like what? Like what you just call me, dog? He eventually explained like Chateauneuf du Pape literally translates to be the castle of the Pope. And the Pope used to go to this castle in the southwest region of France and essentially just got lit and drank a bunch of wine.
Like, okay, I can get behind that.
Right, straight up. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, he's like drinking a bunch of wine. And he would go there so much that, the French wanted to make this castle the Vatican. It didn't happen. But what did end up happening was that the Pope ended up like blessing this land of grapes. It was like, I bless the grapes. And then there you had like Chateauneuf du Pape, which is, I later found out, a sub-region of the Côte d'Aron. And in the Côte d'Aron, they predominantly grow three different grapes, Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre. And that just kind of like sparked my interest in the wine industry. So I ended up from there seeing this world just kind of like open up to me. And at that same time, I had taken this class called The History of Eating and Drinking. And in this class that we read this book called The United States of Arugula. And it talked, it was so dope. It was so dope because it talked about so many dope female chefs who pioneered and revolutionized the way we eat and drink here in America. Mm-hmm. People like Julia Child and her show. And people like Alice Waters and Chez Panisse and the good food movement that she developed at that time and how monumental that was for America in general and also the industry. to where we're still feeling it today with, you know, the farm to table movement,
right.
Where, you know, I think that the good food movement was a little bit more true than the farm to table, because there's a lot of restaurants who are genuinely farm to table. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, like anything that's great, you know, people coin the term and just slap it on without following suit.
Right. Because there's marketing aspects. We saw what happened with the gluten industry and everything becoming gluten. And I have celiac, so I'm like, that does not help me out at all. I'm like, I need you to tell me what's true, not what, you know, you're slapping on there as a marketing objective.
Exactly.
But you're absolutely right.
Right, right. So, I mean, so I ended up taking that class and, you know, ended up falling in love with the industry in a totally different way. And that inspired me to create my own class called the History of Food and Regional Culture. And this was back in Muskegon Heights in particular, where I was teaching kids really in the hood who were ages from 13 to 18 how to cook food from different regions of the world. So each week we'd focus on a different region. First phase of the class, we go over that region, the cooking techniques, where the food's coming from. And then the second part of the class is we'd actually cook that food from that particular region and use those culinary techniques. And then the third part of the class is we'd like smash the food and then listen to the music that was from that particular area.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was so dope. And the reason why it was so important was because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these kids who I was teaching have never even seen the lake. And the lake in Muskegon, Michigan is literally like less than 10 miles away from, you know, where most of these kids are living. So to be able to expand their minds on what the world is and the approach through food and to be able to travel the world through food was extremely important for me, because that's how, you know, I saw the world. You know, I was getting this knowledge in school, and, you know, that was able to open my eyes in that way. So hopefully the objective was to be able to open, you know, their minds that way. So I ended up getting a grant for the class.
Who was invested in this, first of all, incredible work. I love that you were even doing that.
Blessings.
Because I think it's so important, you know, as we start to discover things for ourselves, whether that be things that make you tick, interests that you have, hobbies, something that you're going to be diving into in your career. It, for me personally, and totally again, what I noticed from you is always, how do I bring up other people with me and like spread the knowledge and the information so that it doesn't just stick with me, but you can expand other minds. And like the fact that you were doing that with kids in your own community to show them that the border extended beyond whatever they had framed in their own mindset is phenomenal. Cause then it shows people like, I can transcend beyond whatever I've seen as being my environment. Like there is something beyond that.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, I was very fortunate to have had like some people who saw my vision and believed in me and connected me with the Kellogg Foundation, which was the Muskegon Community Foundation, but through the Kellogg Foundation, who then granted me some dollars to actually fund for like the utilities, so like the knives, the pans, the food, you know, in order for me to like actually create the class. Mm-hmm. I went from there to you know, working at this restaurant. Fast forward like 2 years, not even 2 years, like a year, ended up working at this restaurant called Grove, which was probably the finest of dining restaurants there was in Grand Rapids, where, you know, they had this 5-course preview menu that changed every day. Mm-hmm. And my general manager at the time saw my passion for wine, and she then convinced me and told me about the sommelier exam. And she was like, yo, when you turn 21, you should take this exam. So, you know, I turned 21, ended up going to Traverse City, Michigan, taking the test, the intro test, passed it. Shortly thereafter, I passed it, ended up working for this small distribution company, Elixir Beverage. And at the time, I didn't know how dope like it was and how dope the portfolio was. Because we were representing, like, I was 21. But also we were representing people like, you know, Jose Pastor, the importer from Spain. We were working with Ginny Francois, the natural wine importer, mostly in France, but kind of like all over. Brooks Winery in Oregon that does like amazing Pinot Noir and Riesling. Herman Stories, Russell does down there. I mean, just, it was a dope portfolio. But it was while I was working for this distribution company that I, like, you know, was actually immersed in the industry in the way that I wasn't before, that I started to see even more so the lack of diversity within the space. So that was that gave me the inspiration to create my own thing and my own spin on the industry and how it could be approached from my culture, you know, and from my culture. And that's how I developed Graped Out, which is the entire...
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Say it one more time.
Yeah, Graped Out, yeah. But yeah, so it was, I mean, the entire essence of Graped Out was like literally to take the bougie out of wine, mm-hmm. you know.
Make it accessible.
Exactly.
To everyone.
To everybody, to everybody, you know what I'm saying?
And that's something I appreciate because growing up here as a Latina, you know, it's like the only space that I was ever made to feel like we could operate in was picking the grapes. Like that was where you held your place as a Latin American person. And even now it's like once in a while, maybe I'll see a wine educator here and there. But again, it's an industry that has not been welcoming to people and voices from different backgrounds, whether that means you're Black, you're Latin, whether that means you're Indian, whether it means you're part of the LGBTQ community, whatever that looks like. There's only been one narrative. And I love that as you noticed that there were limitations in this industry where it wasn't as welcoming, that you didn't take that and be like, oh, okay, well, you know, my hands are tied. Nah, you were like, okay, there isn't a space, so I'm going to make the space.
Wow.
I'm going to create it. And you did that with Graped Out.
Wow.
And
you so
started
much.
Bringing in, why are you thinking me? You're the one doing the work. You started bringing in wine, food, art, all of it kind of intersecting as one.
Right. And that's exactly what Graped Out was, or still is. So Graped Out was going to be in two phases. The first phase of which was going to be, which I did, were pop-up wine dinners, where I had five course dinners where it intersected live music, live art, food, and then culture, like you said, all into one experience. So I'd have people like my guy, Jordan Hamilton, who is my homie, always got to shout him out. Check him out if you can. But he's this classically trained cellist who will play in his set. Like he'll be playing Bach 1 second, and then the next second he'll be rapping Chance the Rapper on his cello.
So dope.
Yo, so dope. He fuses like neo soul and classical and rap and so much all into, you know, what and who he is as an artist. And I'd have, you know, the homies who come and do live paintings and just do, you know, amazing work. So yeah, that was the first phase, and then the second phase of Graped Out was going to be actual wine production, which is kind of like which led me to how I came into Napa. And I'll hit on that a little later. But after I created Graped Out, I then ended up leaving Elixir Beverage to go work for Spartan Ash, which is this grocery retail chain in Michigan, one of the largest, the second largest in Michigan. And I was the wine director for three of the stores that they had there. And it was, you know, during that time where I was fortunate enough to have some really dope homies that ended it was crazy how it happened, because one of my friends was we ended up meeting up for dinner and she was like, yo, I just got a PBS show on. Yeah, I just got a PBS show. I can like create like my entire like show based off of, you know, whatever. Yeah. And I was like, yo, what? Like that's so dope. Like I was like, yes, girl, like do your thing. You know what I mean? Like rooting her on and cheering her up and, you know, just gassing her up. And then I get a call from her like the following week and she was like, yo, I just suggested you for the same cohort. Would you be free to like interview for it like tomorrow? And I was like, yo, what? Like, yeah, like say less.
Yes.
So ended up like meeting my producer, Mariano, and, you know, ended up chopping it up. And it turned out to be this cohort of 10 people. And it was this program that was called Shaping Narratives. Mm-hmm. And essentially what Shaping Narratives was it gave 10 people of color the platform to be able to amplify the voices of the people that we represented. So, I mean, it was so powerful. Very similar to what you're doing now. And it basically, there was no restrictions on what our show was or what it had to be or even what medium we had to use. So I ended up creating, and I knew exactly what I wanted from the beginning. But the entire program spanned it for 2 years, where it was basically like 2 years of training. And they were split up into three different modules. The first module of which was basically decolonizing the mind and unlearning a lot of the things that we have learned in America that are just wrong. Things like, I mean, like Christopher Columbus was a terrorist.
Yes, he was.
Like, you know what I mean? He's a terrorist. He's a rapist. He was a horrible human being. But we're taught to celebrate him in his quote-unquote discovery of America, which isn't even really true. But so, yeah. So, I mean, that was the first module. And then, you know, we had the other three modules. But I ended up creating my show, which was called Cultural Ingredients. So essentially what Cultural Ingredients was, you know, I focused on restaurants that are first, second, and third generation immigrant owned and operated.
So dope. You're so cool, man.
That's you, homie, for real. But yeah, focus on first, second, third generation immigrant owned and operated restaurants. And we focus on one key ingredient that they felt as though represented their culture to a T. And then we followed the origin of that particular ingredient and how that ingredient got there. And then we relate that same origin story to that person and how that person got to, in particular, West Michigan and their development of self and their development of creating a business as an immigrant in America. And then we'd actually cook with that particular ingredient and make something. And yeah, that was the show.
Full circle. Full circle.
Yeah, it was dope.
This is what I mean when I talk about how dope you are. And like, you are the kind of like in the core of all of these different areas that intersect with one another, whether it be culture, art, food, wine, and you lead your life in much of that same sense. And it's like, you're not just, you know, doing some incredible things with Wade Sellers. It's everything that has kind of brought you into that moment, but that you came with so much history behind you from projects that you've been working on that also kind of helped to highlight how we can keep intersecting in so much of this work.
That's amazing. Thank you so much.
No, you're so cool. What sort of, as you look at yourself, so I see and recognize how many different spaces you operate in and how you were able to make that your own. I'm curious, you know, as you take a look at yourself and the different intersections that you identify with as a young Black man operating in the wine industry and, you know, coming from originally food and just everywhere that has kind of shaped you to be where you are, what would you say has just helped to shape you as those intersections kind of intertwine with one another in this industry that maybe hasn't always historically been welcoming for Black individuals?
Right. More recently, it's been people like you. I mean, it's been people like...
We're not talking about me.
No. I mean, honestly, it's been people like you. It's been people like Miriam. It's been people like Julia Coney. It's been people like Carlton McCoy. Other people of color within the industry that I'm able to be inspired by and constantly look up to as mentors, but also peers. And that's re-inspired me to be able to create, period, honestly. Mm-hmm. And to continue to strive for greatness, but not only for myself, but also for everybody that's coming up under us and that we can be a good example for them to be able to look up to and see that it is possible because representation does matter so much.
So important. It's like a silent affirmation that you deserve to exist in that space too, and that you can exist in that space,
right.
And that it's not just singular or for a specific group of people, but that it's open for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so important that we always are reminded of that. And, you know, having this circle that I've been able to find in Napa and been blessed enough to find myself in has only amplified and ignited even more fire for me in particular. So, yeah, I mean, I'm so excited for what is to come and what is happening, because like, so even after I created the show, I got a text from, and this happened in like March, and I got a text from my old boss, the owner of Elixir Beverage, the distribution company that I was working for, and he was like, yo, Andrew Jones is looking for some help for harvest season, would you be interested? And this was like it played perfectly because I was, that was going to be the next phase of Graped Out, which was going to be GW3.
Right.
And GW3 is actually named after, you know, my name, George Washington Carver, Walker III. Yeah. And essentially, so the reason why I'm naming it GW3 is because, you know, of my name and paying homage to that legacy. A short story. My great grandfather was actually a janitor at Tuskegee University. And it was while he was a janitor at Tuskegee University that he befriended befriended George Washington Carver. And he befriended him so much so that when George Washington Carver was about to pass away, my grandfather vowed to him that he would name his first son after him, which was, you know, my grandfather, of course. So,
goosebumps.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to even like think about. And that, you know, I hold that dear to me. So it's GW3 is paying homage to not only my grandfather and my father, but also to George Washington Carver and the strides that he made as a black man and as a black scientist for the agriculture industry mm-hmm. through the peanut. Mm-hmm. But for me, making those strides through the agriculture industry, through viticulture and the grape.
And grapes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Is it interesting for you to like draw those parallels or to feel like some part of you always had a pull to the ag industry then? If you think all the way back, I know you talked about originally at first how it all stemmed from how you were just like, you know what, traditional school sense is not for me. Right. And that your parents, you know, opened you up to vocational trade stuff, which for the record, I think is phenomenal because you're right. School isn't for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think we've kind of strayed away from encouraging people to start to dive into those trade vocational fields. And then you end up in phenomenal places, whether right. it be in the culinary world, in the wine world.
Right.
Is it interesting for you to kind of think back, maybe even as a child, something that, you know, was a little bit of a glimmer of, oh yeah, this is going to lead him somewhere close to this area that had some of that ag influence for you?
Man, wow. I wish, you know, I've always had an interest in nature and I've always had an interest in growing things. Yeah, I've always been drawn to it. If you would have said that, you know, I'd be here to George or Trey when he was this like 10 years old, you know, I definitely wouldn't have believed you. You know, it's crazy the circles and where life has taken me. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been on now 5 continents within Ooh. The past, like, yeah, it's crazy in the past, like, you know, 3 years.
Probably tasted some good wine visiting all crazy, those continents.
Yo, for real, straight up. It's crazy, you know, and for somebody who was not great at school, I graduated with like in high school with like a 1.9 GPA, like, if that, it might even been like 1.7. Honestly, it was just trash. You know, what I mean, it wasn't my dig until, you know, I went to, you know, undergrad, and I was like, I always told my parents, like, yo, once I leave the house, I'm like, that's when I'm gonna kick it into like high gear. Like, right. That's when I'm gonna, you know, do my thing. You know, I was very fortunate that, you know, I did my thing in undergrad and at the Culinary Institute of Michigan to where I could get a degree and do that. But, you know, yeah, I still wouldn't have believed you if you would have said that little Trey 10 years ago.
Little Trey. I love it. What has been, then, looking back through this entire experience, I guess, the most, whether it be rewarding, the most exciting project, adventure, maybe task that you were able to be a part of? And I'm curious, even kind of beyond that, how would you say that moment sort of shaped you to where you are now in your career? And what were the lessons that you learned from that?
Thank you.
That changed you.
Thank you so much for that question. That is such a great question. And to answer that, you know, I think it was the history of food and regional culture. Honestly, that project, my first real project, mm-hmm. you know, where I saw a need to give back in only the way that I could. You know, I've always been an activist and still am an activist. And I think that it's important that, you know, everyone is an activist and not an activist in the terms of what, you know, people may think. You know, activism is showing that we all have privilege and acknowledging that privilege and being conscious of our unconscious and making sure that we always make space and make room to be acknowledged that. And that it, I think that's the first way that you have to be an activist.
I love that definition.
Yeah.
I think too often people just think it's, you know, like we saw this summer, people hitting the streets, which is very right. important to amplify right. your voice in that sense. But it's like, what do you do in the spaces in which you operate beyond that, right? And how are you challenging people? How are you challenging yourself as well
right.
when it's not in the face of hitting the streets, when it's not, you know, a retweet on social
right.
media,
right.
but
right.
in actual impactful ways in your community, in yeah. your job, in your home,
yeah.
in your circle of friends.
Exactly, in your everyday life, period. So, you know, it took me to understand that, you know, first and foremost, but once I did, I saw a need to create, you know, and do. And once I did, and once I got that feeling of, you know, I'm still connected with some of the kids who just graduated, you know what I'm saying? And they're like, yo, Mr. Walker, like, yo, I see you out here traveling. Like, that's going to be me once the world opens up again. You know what I mean? Like I want to go to Portugal like you. I want to go to Morocco. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
And those are those moments that I'm like, yes, like that's, That's why
you did it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think that set the precedence for, you know, everything else, mm-hmm. Because it merged all of those worlds that I was involved in and that I was passionate about and still am to this day. So yeah, you know, and even shaping to what we're doing now, you know, I'm very fortunate that, you know, I work for Wade Sellers mm-hmm. and have the platform that I do now solely by myself, period. But also to tag on Wade Sellers and also like Dwayne Wade and the impact that we can have and will have and do have within the wine industry is going to be huge.
Yes, it is.
I'm really excited for the projects that, you know, we're working on and about to roll out.
Oh, any that you're allowed to share?
Yeah, not yet, but I got you. I got you.
No, I love that. You know me. I had to ask.
Right.
And I'm going to be right there for it. Yes, I'm excited to see it all roll out. Yes. It's going to be so great. Yes. So clearly we know and we recognize as we've been talking, you know, during this time that there is a need to increase and amplify those voices.
Right.
What do you think is sort of the first thing that, whether it be someone who's a part of the industry or maybe not even a part of the industry, ways in which we can loop people in to help advance that and create that new wave, that new change?
Right. First and foremost is like, you know, goes back to representation, right? You need to have people of color in power positions mm-hmm. and not just, you know, some like foo-foo.
I like that you just said power positions.
Yeah,
it's so important.
It's so important. And not just like some foo-foo like D&I committee, like Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Board. Like bump that.
Because we're seeing that happen,
yeah,
right? Everyone's all about like, oh, did you do your DEI training? Did you do this? Which I think it's great that we're going to put that education in there and that for once companies are prioritizing even doing this.
Right.
But I'm like, that is not the end all be all that is really truly going to catapult I hesitate to say the term radical change because it's really not that radical of an idea. There should
equal access should not be radical. That's not radical. You feel me? To say that you want to get paid the same.
To say that you want to see someone that looks like you in that position of power.
Exactly.
Knowing that you have the education, you have the expertise, the knowledge to be there.
Exactly.
It's just about creating opportunity.
Exactly.
Creating access.
Exactly. So miss me with that like D&I committee. Put people of color, put women on your actual boards. Mm-hmm. Like that, and it starts there. But an even easier step is to just show people of color and women and LGBTQIA+, show them, you feel me? Market them, mm-hmm. put their faces on, you know what I mean? And pay them for it, you feel
yes.
me?
Yes.
And like when you show them, like pay them for it. Because I think so often, you know, we get into the mindset of where, oh, I'm doing this for exposure. I'm doing it to do whatever. No, pay you or pay them, pay me, you mm-hmm. feel me?
And period. Ask for it.
Yeah, exactly.
As that black, brown, LGBTQ+IAA individual,
right.
Know your worth and
exactly.
ask for it and then tax it.
Exactly.
Top of that.
You feel me? Period. You know what I mean? So yeah, definitely. That I think is the most impactful way that I think that we can have change currently, because once a person is able to see themselves represented in a power position, mm-hmm. they then think that they can do it and they can do it. Mm-hmm. But it takes representation and it takes that moment for you to actually be able to see that it's possible. I was able to see Carlton McCoy and all the greatness that he's accomplished within his life and think that I could do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's so inspiring. People like Julia Coney and, you know, the success mm-hmm. that she's had throughout her career, and even like Philippe Andre, you know, so many of these other people of color within the industry that are doing it, I look up to so much, and they inspire me to be able to be that next inspiration for somebody that's coming up under me. Because I mean, honestly, the way that I got to Wade Sellers, you know, after I got that text from my old boss, you know, I shot it over to one of my homies, Saman, I have to shout her out too, who is a winemaker down in like Central Coast. And I knew that she had already been working with Andrew Jones. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you know, Andrew Jones is dope, he's cool, but don't think that this is your only opportunity. She then connected me with the winemaker at Tooth & Nail and Rabble. Ended up having an amazing conversation with the winemaker, absolutely amazing woman, but they didn't offer. I mean, even to go back, to like digress back to Saman, I didn't even know what a harvest internship was. was, honestly. When I got that text from my boss, I just thought I was going to be out in the field, like, picking grapes.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, and I was totally fine with that. Like, at that point, you know, I just wanted
to be.
I'm
in Napa? Cool.
Yeah, like, exactly. You feel me?
Experience.
Like,
let's
period.
Go.
Exactly. But until I had that conversation with her, and for her to, like, break it down, she was like, no, this isn't your only opportunity. Yes, you should ask for this amount of money. Mm-hmm. Yes, the winery should pay for your boots. Like, all of that stuff. I had no idea.
Right.
It was, like, a thing, you know, until I had that conversation. So I didn't end up taking the Harvest internship at Tooth & Nail because they didn't offer any housing for the Harvest interns. Mm-hmm. And California is already, like, expensive
Super
enough.
Super expensive.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
My goodness.
Yeah, for real. So if I'm a dip, like, for three months, like, from Michigan, like, all my paycheck is going to housing. Mm-hmm. Like, what am I going to do when I get back to Michigan?
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. So. Talk about, you know, again, you said for people to, you know, invest in ways that they can get involved, whether it be show these people, have these people in positions of power, but then financially invest in programs and nonprofit organizations that already exist that are doing the work that can just immediately, if you are in a position where you have access to financial dollars that can uplift people who are operating these spaces, who are curious to start up, you know, continue to exceed in their career, do something like provide housing, put your money in a place where that's one less thing someone then has to worry about when it comes to trying to operate in that space and even enter that space.
Exactly. So, I mean, I got to plug everybody. If I miss one,
I love it.
Things like Wine Unify, things mm-hmm. like Cal Poly's scholarship program, that's Amon Mitchelson
and
Justin, the Roots Fund, mm-hmm. obviously, yeah, all of them, you know what I mean? Pay, like, donate, because these programs are creating access for people of color, and donate, period. So, you know, ended up not taking the
loan. Donate, if he didn't say it again.
Yeah, right, donate. So ended up, you know, getting connected with another homie that was at a winemaker at Brooks in Oregon, ended up chopping it up with their winemaker, and they offered a stipend, they offered housing, and they had a private chef for all the interns. So
dope.
I was like, yeah. Yo, dope. Like, I'm
You're
going
like, to, they're doing
that's
it, right?
It. Exactly. I'm going to Oregon. Like, this is, that was the decision. That was it. But 2 weeks prior to that, I had shot this random message to info@Wade Sellers. And I was like, hey, my name is George Walker. I'm 26. Don't know if you guys are accepting any Harvest interns this year, but I'd love to work this upcoming season. So 2 weeks later, I didn't hear back until 2 weeks later. And I got a message from my now boss, the president, Matt Nauman. He was like, yo, my bad. I'm just now getting back to you, but I've been on vacation for the past 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. How about you shoot over your resume and let's hop on a call tomorrow? So end up shooting him over the resume. I'm freaking out. Because, like, I got to hear back. Like, I got to email back. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
I was just like, I was geeked that I got to, like, even just chop it up. Like,
shoot
this is
your
crazy.
Shot.
Right, exactly. Shoot your shot. You know what I'm saying? So.
It might not always get in the basket, but it might.
Exactly.
It might.
You never know. You know what I mean? Whether it's a half court shot, whether it's a full lob.
Whatever. Like, take like, that whatever. Leap of faith.
Exactly. So, you know, we hop on a call. He's like, yo, tell me your story. So I ended up telling him my story. And he was like, okay, dope. So here's lowdown. We're actually not looking for a Harvest intern at all. And my heart dropped. And then instantly, like, he was like, yo, but what we're actually looking for is I'm looking for a right-hand person for the whole operation.
Boom.
What?
Yeah. You're like, yo. Oh, there's a better position
Yo,
for
say
me?
What? You are like, this is, I'm like, yo, everything that I remember saying after that was just like, yes. Like, I am down. I'm here for it.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
So cool.
Like, it was amazing. You know what I mean? But, like, I had something that I didn't expect it at all. You know what I mean? So, you know, I instantly hit up my mentors to talk about, you know, contract negotiations and what that looked like,
mm-hmm.
and having, you know, other people who were in these same positions to see what that worth is and what my worth was, because, you know, I had no idea.
And that
honestly.
Is so important.
It's so important.
It is so important
it's
because
so important.
All too often it's almost like the tone is like, we should be grateful to be here.
Right.
And so it's like, I'll take whatever you give me.
Right.
But it's like, no, we have to start valuing our worth. We have to start making everybody else value the worth and work that you bring to the table, that exactly. wealth of knowledge. And the fact that you had, you know, an incredible group of people around you to be able to talk to them. And that's why representation is so important, because they've been through that.
Exactly.
They're there. And maybe there are things that they learned that they went through that they can, you know, drop a little golden nugget of knowledge and be like, you know what, this is the experience I did. This is how I would have done it differently. Right. So that, you know, it now assists you in negotiating, whether it be contracts, whatever that looks like.
Right. Exactly. So transparency is so key amongst us, and we have to be transparent in order to be able to take the people who are coming up under us to the next level. Yeah, I mean, exactly what you just said. And, you know, I was very fortunate and blessed to have those people around me that helped me along that process. And it worked. You know, I'm living in Napa. I'm chilling. You know what I mean?
He's here. I'm working. He's been here for 2 months. He's like, I'm not looking to leave anywhere.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Were there ever any moments where you thought, like, you know what, this is a little too hard. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if the moment I put myself in that position, now I'm really vulnerable, because what if I fail? Like, maybe I just shouldn't. Like, were there moments you thought you were going to give up? And if there were, what did you do? Who was around, or what happened that kind of just allowed you to not end up giving up?
Wow. Yeah. You know, I've struggled deeply so many times. You know, I've struggled with depression for sure. Mm-hmm. I actually remember, it's crazy. This is going to get real deep. I was actually in China, and I was at one of the lowest points of my life, and I was about to take my own life, honestly. And I was at, I was at a very, very vulnerable, place in my life, and didn't know how I was going to get out at all. You know, I'm very fortunate that, you know, I had my cousin, who was with me, and who talked me out of some, or talked me through a lot of things like that, to continue on and to tell me that I had purpose and that, you know, I am here for a reason. And what got me, I mean, that in particular was what got me out of it, but what has kept me out of it for me, you know, I'm not the most religious person at all. You know, I do come from a religious background, and one thing that I have kept with me has been, you know, gospel music in general. And listening to gospel for me has been like my inspiration to like be like, yo, like, suck it up, you got it. You know what I mean? You're here for a reason. You know what I'm saying? And that's been my way. That, and also having an amazing supportive system and a supportive circle that continues to remind me of why I'm here, and remind me that I do have a purpose. Because, you know, we get in those, we have those moments, you know, and moments like this where I'm saying this like very publicly for the first time ever is, you know, super like vulnerable.
Thank you for sharing. First of all, it takes a lot, because, like you said, you know, this is a public space, and that's something very vulnerable. And, you know, it's not always something that maybe with our friends, we can be a little bit vulnerable with and let them know some things that we've gone through, but maybe not, you know, exposure for whoever is listening to know about you. But I think it also allows people to connect and to see realness, like raw realness, unfiltered. I love unfiltered wine. I love unfiltered knowledge, unfiltered experiences. Because it shows, you know, that it's not this, not everything was perfectly lined up, you know, from the beginning to tee you up to being exactly what got you here. There were moments, many moments, where you go through self-doubt, where you go through, you know, questioning purpose and you know, what might be happening. And I'm sure that looks different for everybody, but I appreciate your willingness to be so vulnerable enough to acknowledge that, so that anybody, you know, who does listen or who questions or who's ever gone through something like that knows that it's not this cookie cutter picture, and that there are real challenges that come with whatever space you're choosing to operate in, but that it doesn't need to necessarily define the extent of what you can achieve.
Wow. You are amazing. Whoa.
What like, do you mean?
Oh, my
You're
God.
Amazing. We're here for you.
Like, you just like, oh, my God. Wow. That was so dope. Y'all, did you hear how she just wrapped that all in? Like, what? Who am I sitting next to right now?
Oh y'all? My gosh, this is you're amazing. Too funny. You're too funny. Okay, so one thing that I do want to know then is I guess through all of that and everything that you've been able to overcome, how you've been able to get to where you are, what I guess inspires you to keep being that best self?
The reminder of people who are coming under me, period. Like that is it.
Yeah,
that,
hands
I'm,
down.
I'm doing it for my people. Yeah, period. That's it.
I love it. And we see that initially from what you talked about, that first initial project about making sure that kids in your hometown in that area knew that there was a world beyond just that,
right.
That community.
Yeah.
So I love that. Absolutely. Hats off to you, my friend. You are absolutely phenomenal. is there any piece of advice that you would say you wish you had either received way back in the day or even now that you really want to leave people with who are just looking to take a chance on themselves and, you know, explore this world or explore a world that interests them.
Shoot your shot for real.
Oh,
period.
Say it again.
Shoot your shot for real, homies.
Is that just because he's working for Dwayne Sellers?
No. For real though, like you have to. I mean, no matter if we said it before. No matter if it's a layup, no matter if it's a half court lob, whatever. No matter if it's a slam dunk, just make sure you shoot your shot. Because if you don't, how can you ever score?
It's accountability piece in there, right?
You are your
player,
right?
You are your own player.
You are
your own person operating in this world,
exactly.
And there might be things in the outside world that you know hit you hard,
right?
But it's how are you picking yourself back up?
Right.
You know, folks who break their Achilles out there on the court, they still come back next season,
exactly.
Coming in hard.
Doing it.
How
Doing
are you coming in hard
exactly.
through everything that you've
exactly.
been pushed through?
So if you got to shoot an email, if you got to shoot a DM, if you got to do whatever, reach out to people because the resources are becoming better. They're still not where they need to be at all, not by any means. But I think there are strives that are happening right now where I think a lot of people who want to be successful, particularly in this industry, well, not particularly in all industries right now,
right.
for people of color, I think is a great time for us to be able to take advantage of and reach out to those people who are already doing it and seek mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing is they can do is they say no.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, but at the same time, you could also be chilling in freaking Napa like 2 months later. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like me. Like I shot a DM or I shot a random email and yeah.
And look at where you are now.
Yeah.
It just takes shooting your shot.
It's crazy.
I love that. So basically, if science fails us 50 to 100 years from now, and there's a book that's written about you, and that's the only thing that gets left behind, is that the title, Shoot Your Shot?
Shoot Your Shot. I'm here for it.
What's the title
that's
of your
it,
book,
it.
And
Shoot
what's the
shot.
Blurb say?
Shoot Your Shot. Oh, man, that's so good. The blurb says, this one's stumping me. I don't know. That's to be continued.
To be continued. I
that's
like
it.
That. We're
no,
still writing
it.
The story.
That's it. To be continued.
To be continued. Because we're
continued.
All here writing that story.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love that. And everyone else out there, you know, just keep writing that story. I would say stay hungry. You know,
right.
It's something that I've noticed that you've done through everything that you've continued, whether it was what you initially started with that group of young individuals or with what you're doing with Wade Sellers. It's you've got some new projects coming up. So I'm so excited to stay in the know.
Yes,
and stay connected
yes.
with you.
I'll tell you there,
and
yeah.
I absolutely think that you're, yeah, I'll get the 411, I'll get the big sip, not on the air.
I got you.
But I love that you wrap that up with, you know, your group of people around you, besides just shooting your shot, right? Is making sure that you do have that group and that you do stay connected because it's hard to navigate that space when it's completely on your own.
Mm.
Not that it's not possible, but it makes it a little harder. So
look at
who's on your team and make sure that you keep those
Tight
around
circle.
You.
Yeah.
I love it. Cheers to you, my
Cheers,
friend.
Homie.
I love this.
Yes.
Thanks for joining me
yes,
on the
God.
Big Sip.
Yo,
George Washington Carver Walker III, GW3. Incredible human.
Wow.
Has done some phenomenal things. An excellent, phenomenal assistant director of ops for Wade Sellers and is going to be doing so many more phenomenal things. So make sure you are keeping up to date with him, knowing all the knowledge. Follow him on Instagram. How does everyone stay connected with you?
Yes, IG, George Walks 3. And yeah, that's me. Graped Out, @GrapedOut as well. And D Wade Sellers.
Give us a follow. Make sure you hit that follow. Make sure you tap in.
Yes.
Make sure you keep tuning into The Big Sip next week, every Thursday, dropping a new phenomenal human being doing the damn work, bootstrapped, operating in these spaces. Phenomenal human beings like yourself, my friend. Wow. So cheers.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
You're so welcome.
The Big Sip.